Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
To those Forking Fangirls, where we talk all things nerdy, book, TV, movies, pop culture, fandoms, and how they integrate into our adult lives. I'm Christine.
And I'm Natasha.
And today we're talking the ACOTAR book 6 and 7/book 5 and 6 title reveal and cover drops, which happened this morning. It's very exciting. There will probably come that main discussion be spoilers about ACOTAR if you haven't finished those. But before we get to that, we've got lots of other stuff. Natasha, what can they do if they will want to skip the other stuff?
Yeah, there is a timestamp in our show notes, as always, if you want to just skip the news. You know, wouldn't recommend, but I understand. But first, we are going to jump right into Snap, Crackle, Pop Culture News.
Yeah, Snap, Crackle, Pop Culture News. Today, in Taylor Swift, before we get to our ACOTAR stuff, Taylor Swift has a new haircut. It's giving her 1989 era. It's like shoulder length.
It's a lob.
It's a lob, as Natasha says.
With her thick-ass bangs.
And so she revealed this haircut when stepping out of a fire door on August 13th with like the new haircut and a lavender dress, which usually says new era, you know, when she comes out with a new vibe. Mm-hmm. And on that same day, exactly a year ago, she came out of that same door. Oh, wearing God. That showgirl plaid outfit. Do you remember that plaid, like red, orange, green, yeah, like blazer skirt outfit? Mm-hmm. Same day, a year later, she comes out with this fresh haircut and new vibe. So who knows what's happening? The vibe is almost kind of giving 2006, which... very well, very, which transitions right into what the fuck is Taylor going to drop this fall? Because now that she came out in a new vibe, people are like, wait, is this Taylor Swift 13? Because if you go back to the Bejeweled music video where she had that elevator with all the numbers on it, and you know, like the numbers correlated to her albums and the colors correlated to the albums, the number 13 was that lavender lilac purple. Mm. So it's suspicious, but it could just be like a debut TV thing because it is the 20th anniversary of debut, October 24th, 2026.
Hasn't her her profile pictures have changed? Like on,
they are giving the debut vibe. It's the one from the Toy Story song, I Knew It, I Knew You.
Oh, okay, okay.
That is her profile picture now. And so 20 years ago, she announced her first album on MySpace on August 12th. So there were some theories that she was going to announce like the 20th anniversary edition of debut coming out this year on August 12th.
But that passed.
Alas, that passed, and it has not happened. But there were still all these reports of like hundreds of thousands of records being moved into her warehouse. So that says something. Something is coming. I feel like it would be remiss not to drop the debut TV on the debut's birthday, 20th birthday, you know?
Mm, yeah.
It feels like a big monumental moment. 20 years ago her career started. So I hope she drops that. But
In other Taylor Swift news, she went to a friend's wedding in London. Laura Sisk and Ollie Jacob got married. They're recording engineers that produced music with her. And she was there in this like blue dress with flowers. I posted some pictures that people posted yesterday. People got official paparazzi shots.
There's like this one shot of like Sabrina
and Jack Antonoff. Yeah, I saw it too. They're all they were all looking at the camera, and then it was compared to the one of Taylor, who was just like smiling and talking to someone else and ignoring the cameras. Fun stuff. And the other Taylor Swift news I have is that Travis, in a clip, we didn't talk about this, but he called Taylor his wife multiple times in an interview, and it was the first time we've publicly heard him be like, my wife, my wife, my wife.
That's crazy. I just got the chills.
It's so cute. Natasha, you want to talk about this?
Yeah, so D23 happened this weekend. I just got back from it. I was literally asleep on the couch. I fell asleep like with my computer on my lap uploading photos from D23. Christine's like, I thought you were asleep. I was like, yeah.
No, when my texts go unread and we're getting up onto a podcast hour, I'm like, oh no, I might have to call just to make sure she's not asleep.
She's like, we're going to talk about Akhtar. I'm like, okay. Like, brain is waking up. Okay. Anyways, all that to say, yes, I was at D23. No, I was not in those big Honda Center announcements with all the D23 news. I just literally got it as you all were getting it. But I was, like, at the event. So I don't... my mind is like,
I feel like I was there because so many people were posting every second what was happening in the Honda Center.
Our friends, like, who were at the Honda Center...
17 reels a day.
Yes. It is literally crazy. Like, my friend Patrick, he was like getting up super early. They were posting. I was like, wow, yeah. you guys are crazy. But anyways, so D23 is Disney's big convention, and it kind of feels like the Stark Fair, you know, like an Iron Man where they're on that like big stage. And like, that's kind of what happens.
World Fair equivalent for Disney.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they rent out the Honda Center, which is where the Anaheim Ducks play, and fill it with like 30,000 people. And then they put on these elaborate produced like updates, and like there's show tunes, and I don't know, Neil Patrick Harris came out, and Glenn
Close. They
have like 80
performances for everything that they're talking about.
Yes. So like it is all to get like hype and people to like get excited. So the first day of D23 of the big Honda Center panel is all for like their live action news. And I think, yeah, they're... So the first day is like movies and TV shows, live action, animated. Second day is like parks, like the Disney parks updates. And then the third day is their Disney Legends panel, where they like, it's like an achievement award, essentially, where they just honor people. Yeah. So the big movie news that came out of D23 is the X-Men. The new X-Men movie is coming out on May 5th, and we have a full cast. Do we have the cast written down? No, but I'm going to try to remember from the top of my mind. The one I remember
is... We did talk about it last time. Yeah.
Adam Driver has been cast.
Yes. As like a villainy guy, right?
I have no idea, you know?
I just saw a cartoon picture of his character, and it looked like a villain, so that's why I said that.
Heard of him. We already knew that Kit Connor was cast. We already knew that Sadie Sink.
And Emma Frost.
Emma Frost is, yeah. Wait, hold on.
X-Men. Oh, the girl from Obsession was cast.
As Rogue,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Mara Weaving is Emma Frost. Christopher Abbott is Professor Charles Xavier. Indy Navarrete is Rogue. Maya Boyd is Storm. Then Adam Driver crashed the panel with one final video surprise, where he revealed that he will be playing a very sinister figure named Nathaniel Milbury.
He is a sinister figure.
Yeah. So that'll be out on in May 5th in 2028. It's fucking wild. 2028. And I guess we got a Ghostwriter premiere.
July 28th, 2028.
Okay, so that's coming right after. And then Black Panther 3, December 15th, 2028.
That's a lot of movies for them that, in 1 year.
I'm wondering, because like, that will, because we get, so we get Doomsday this year. The next year, they're filming Secret Wars. Spider-Man. Oh. What do you mean? Oh, Spider-Man. Oh, Spider-Man
we
this
got
year.
Two. We got two big ones this year.
Yeah, but there, so there's nothing in between Doomsday and Secret Wars. Secret Wars is out the fall in 2027, and then the next movie would be X-Men.
All of those scripts are coming after whatever happens in Secret Wars, so they had to push them all to 2028.
Yeah. And then I think only like there's only like the Vision show that's coming to D23 at some point.
Vision
that's
Quest comes in October of this year.
Okay. Yeah. And that's kind of it. They've really like pulled back the reins on Marvel
sounds
projects.
Like a lot. Sounds like
what?
A lot to me.
It
sounds like a lot.
I mean, compared to like there used to be like an Ant-Man and a Captain America and
well,
then
that's
an Avenger.
Rolled out like a million different things at once and it all went shitty. That was like era of three.
Yeah.
Phase three was a flop.
Yeah, phase three was a flop. They also unveiled, I was really excited for, was Frozen 3 stuff.
I know, I didn't want to look at any of it, but Kristen Bell was there.
Anna Dina Menzel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she performed for the Savannah Bananas. Did you see
it? I know, I did see that.
Reblogged it on Instagram. Like, what is it called? A re-insta?
I think it's, a reblog? Repost?
Reblog is Tumblr.
Well, they showed, like, a clip of the beginning of Frozen 3 film, and then her and Idina sang a song from Frozen 3, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, yeah, and I was like, I don't want to hear it.
It was really good. You know, the song did, it was giving down, down, down the road, down the witch's road.
Ugh, I love that.
Well, because it's the same writers.
Love. Mm-hmm. All right. On other news, we are going to Forks for the Forever Twilight in Forks Festival this year. We are getting there, I think, Thursday, September 11th. Friday, September 11th. Whatever Friday is, that's when our podcast, live podcast, is. And you just have to get your ass to Forks. And I think it's free to attend our podcast live recording if you want to come. And that's going to be super fun. And then on Saturday, there's an author panel, and I'm going to be on that. And after that, I will have 30, 40, and Forever Loans if you want to get one, or I could sign anything you already have. That'll be fun. And we'll be doing stuff all weekend, and it'll be super fun. There's so many fun activities and like Twilight-themed parties and events, and it's great.
We're going to have so much fun. This is our fourth.
This is our fourth Forever Twilight in Forks.
Fourth Forever. FTF.
FTF.
TFF is going to FTF.
Fuck yeah. And transitioning right off of that, Kristen Stewart recently was asked if she was Team Edward or Team Jacob. And she's like, could you imagine if I just like had an answer? Like, yeah, I thought about this a lot. And like, I don't give a fuck. it's so her. She's also been talking about like how in love she was in with Rob when she was like filming New Moon, and how she's like goes back and watches, and she's like, I was just so distracted by him, I feel like I really wasn't doing my best work.
Wait, she said that recently?
Yeah. Wow. Unless these clips are old and I'm just seeing them, but I saw the clips of it and I was like, whoa.
Isn't she married now?
Yeah, but like she can reminisce on her first love.
That's true.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about in the news before we moved on to What Right Now?
God, I mean, I there was so much stuff from D23 that I can't even like pull out if you guys
honestly,
really care.
Honestly, I was so overloaded, and a lot of it was just like, remember, this is coming. Remember, this is coming. Like, there was a Rami and Michelle reunion, which was really cute seeing them out on stage together.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, but like, it was just being like, remember, this is coming.
Well, they just announced it. Yeah, it was just, and then like they brought it, they like did like a Tangled update. Mm-hmm. But we've all been watching the
first
paparazzi
footage from Tangled.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does look a lot like Regina George.
Yes.
What is that? It's like the same hair. She's got like the same way.
She's got like the same shaped head, and like the hair is
the same color.
Well, that and like she can't have any movement in her hair because it's really just fucking long. So it's all just like one length. Yeah.
It's so strange. The side by side was undeniable.
I know. Did you post that? Oh. How did I see that this morning?
I saw it this morning too.
Yeah.
Well, no, we must have been following the same thing or the same algorithm. Like, I was like, what the fuck? She did look so familiar. And I saw someone the other day being like, I didn't know Rachel McAdams was in this movie. And in the comments, like, people were like, that's not Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, guys.
It's not Rachel McAdams. It's just a girl who's a lot like Rachel McAdams. They could play mother daughter. She should play Regina George's daughter in a Mean Girls spinoff. All right. Moving on to what right now, Natasha, what have you been reading?
I finished an entire book in one day. I forgot.
Are you talking about the romance revival?
No, I finished Julie's, I finished Vera
Wang.
Stein is,
Vera Wang.
I finished Vera Stein is Fine in literally a day.
I need to read this book.
It is so good. It is definitely like I was telling Julie, because I had to tell Julie, I was like, guys, I was like, Julie, this is so good. I love this book so much. It feels like a very grown up Dumplin'. Like all the feels I felt reading Dumplin' are now in this older character with the same sort of issues that like we have
the
as
evolution.
Like older. Yes. Yeah. And I love the background she's created. So Vera Stein is the granddaughter of this like screen queen. And it's set in Los Angeles. And so her grandma,
what's a screen queen,
so like a 1950s, 60s starlet who was in like those like B horror films. Who was just like all boobs and face.
Okay.
Yeah, who would just like scream and die.
Okay.
So so Vera is a granddaughter, and then she had been taking care of her mom, who was very ill, and we start with like her mom had just died. So and Vera felt like her entire life was just taking care of her mom, and her grandma like really wasn't there to help her. And then her grandma's like, well, I sold the house and I'm gonna move to Palm Springs. So bye bye. And Vera's like, the fuck?
Wait, she has a house in Palm Springs and she's
she has
there?
A house in Los Angeles in Beverly Hills, and she sold it.
Okay. Okay.
And Vera was living there and now has to like, yeah, and can't really afford to live anywhere else because she's like was a full-time caretaker. Mm-hmm. And she, there's like, she has this other job. I'm not going to go too much in the details because I really want you guys to read it. But yeah, it's set in LA. It's also set in Palm Springs, in a retirement community. And there's lots and lots and lots of fun characters there. Yeah. And it's like a late bloomer. I remember reading it being the synopsis and it was like about a divorce and it's like, no, it's really not. It's about a woman who's a late bloomer. So, yeah, I really liked it. It was so good. And the audiobook was fantastic. The woman who was reading Vera Stein, her grandma voice, impeccable. That's all I have to say. Okay, what have you? Oh,
nice.
And then I started The Romance Revival by Christina Loren.
Christina Loren. Okay, let's talk about The Romance Revival because we had a whole segment about it earlier. And like when I first saw it and read the bare minimum of the synopsis because I didn't want to be spoiled, I was like, okay, this is about a divorce. Then we get Natasha reading the actual synopsis and it's like, wait, this is a Frankenstein book. This is a rom-com. Then I actually read the book. I'm 40% in and I'm like, no, this is a literary fiction.
There are a lot of issues we are dealing with in this book. It's not just
this
weird, freaky Frankenstein.
Book. This is a divorce book basically working its way back from a divorce. It's giving like happy place where like the couple is like trying to find their way back to each other. That's what we're doing in this book. So it's not as like cutesy. It's more like deep and like relationship overcoming like the problems in your relationship and finding your way back to love, like despite all these other issues happening. Yeah. That's what it feels like.
That is definitely. But there's
is that
like
what it
this,
feels like to you?
Yeah. I mean, okay. Yeah. Well, Julia Whalen is reading it to us.
Julia Whalen is the audiobook narrator and she's amazing. But like, it's not like a haha, this is funny and like lighthearted. It's like her husband gets hit by a car.
And he's wonderful.
On their anniversary, she has a top secret confidential job. So she's been hiding like what she actually does, her whole relationship with him, because she's been in the job for 10 years. And she's literally working on stuff that could bring people back to life within the first 10 minutes of death if injected into them. Okay. And she's also working on like top notch medical stuff to just to like heal lots of diseases. But like the most top secret thing is this bringing people back to life thing, because her parents died in a car crash when she was younger and she doesn't want it. Like they couldn't be saved. They couldn't get there fast enough to save them. And if they had had her technology and been able to inject this stuff that could keep them alive long enough to be saved, then they could have been saved. So by chance, she has this technology on her because of something that happened at work, and she injects him with it, and then he wakes up and he doesn't remember anything. So, like, they're kind of starting from the beginning.
Yeah. So, like, how the science... So, yeah, he gets injected, and then the big, like, laser thing that she's been working on that's going to, like, heal cancer, she puts his body in there, and then like that heals. Like.
Yeah, she has to sneak him into work. Like, this is the most rom-commy part when they're like trying to sneak him into work and get past the AI. His name is Robert Pattinson there. Like,
oh my god, the Twilight. Wait.
References.
Wait. The only cute part was like when
the Volturi.
Have a flashback. The Volturi. Let me say it. We have a flashback to when they first met at a wedding. And this, her husband's from Italy, and she asks, like, so are the
Volturi real?
And then we have the Robert Pattinson joke.
Yeah, but other than that, it's pretty deep cuts so far. Maybe it'll...
I was thoroughly enjoying it. I am very ready to feel all the emotions. But yeah, dude, I am.
So am I. I haven't put it down. I was listening to it nonstop. But like, I was, when I got 40% through, I was like, not a rom-com.
No.
It's more of a drama.
Yeah. It's like their other book, Love in Other Words. That's more drama. Have you read that one?
I didn't. I think I started it, and then it was during an era where I was like busy, and I never actually got around to reading it. I think I did like the sample.
Yeah. Yeah. So I put it on. I stayed up until 4:30 in the morning on Friday night sewing my Megara Taylor Swift dress for D23. And I was like, okay, well, I finished Vera Stein, time to start another book. And I was like, reminded that the book was out.
Literally, like, yes. You reminded me that the book was out. I finished Adversary of the Villain. I was like, I don't know what to read. And Natasha was like, oh, you might want to do the romance revival. And I was like, So I started it like right after you said that too. As I was like, Julia Whalen does the audiobook.
I haven't read a Julia Whalen. I feel like... No, I definitely read like Emily Henry after our interview. For some reason, though, like this one, I was like really picturing Julia.
Because now we've interviewed her.
Oh, I know.
That's why. Because I could see her way more now, too. But anyway, okay, where was I going with this? Okay, I can't find... This has been happening to me a lot. I don't buy as many books now because I'm like reading on my phone and shit. And so I don't end up with the physical book. But when I buy a physical book, I fucking lose it. Okay? There's like a book eater in my house where I get a new book and it disappears if I don't immediately place it on my fucking shelf.
and I can't find the romance revival. I'm very upset.
You think it's in my car?
No. I brought it in. I remember. Okay. Something.
Mine is definitely still in my car.
I brought it in. And the same thing happened with The Good Girl's Guide to Murder. I was like, where the fuck are those books? I bought them and they disappeared. And I'm sick of this. Ugh, I can't find anything.
This sounds like a personal issue.
You don't think there's a ghost stealing my good new releases?
Yeah, there's definitely like a new book reader ghost. It's like, ooh, new books, Christine Bring. I take and I take away from her.
I like how you gave him the accent from Heated Rivalry.
You like girls.
All right. So other than that, I read The Adversary to the Villain so fast. I loved this book so much. It's so good. And then I got to the end and I wanted to throw it out the window. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You texted me this and I was like, okay, I'm going to have to unpack that later.
I'll tell you about it later because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But like, I'm going to tell you that the fact that this was the last book in the series, false advertising.
It's not the last, right?
No, it's not the last. She's now announced that it's not the last. But like, it was kind of made to sound like it was the last before. And I specifically kept saying like, it might be the last because I thought that maybe this would happen. And then it did. And I was mad because it really felt like the last. You know, they were wrapping it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, psych! And I was like, Hannah, how dare you do this?
So how many more books are there?
There's at least a fifth. I hope the fifth is the last because I think any more would be like, we're real stretching.
Okay.
Unless like it was like about other characters.
You know? Yeah.
Because I think the villain.
There's the world is like really.
Yeah. The world is huge. There's so much to dive into there. It was just like those specific characters. I feel like their arc. Mm-hmm. Is almost done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But yeah, it's so fun. Like, I think it's the most fun I've ever had reading an Assistant to the Villain book. I mean, the last couple I've had the best time with. I think the first one's the only one where, like, you're waiting for something to happen. But, like, she's really good at, like, releasing that tension with some hijinks of some kind where they have to make out or have to sleep in one bed or have to bathe together, you know? So you always get these moments. And then in this one, it's like, we're there. And we get to live in that, and it's so fun.
I'm excited.
Anyway, yeah, they're a ball. They're a blast. A ball. They're a blast. So funny. Like, I just have so many moments where I'm just laughing out loud. The audiobook narrator does such a good job doing the villain's voice that I, like, really picture the villain with this voice. Like, it's a woman, I think, and she's a very good man voice.
Okay.
Yeah.
What, anyway, like, speed do you read it at?
1.25 is the magic speed for reading the Assistant to the Villain series. Okay. via audiobook. That recommendation came from our patron, Laura. Thank you very much. All right. Patron, what about TV?
Laura. I mean, we watched Sterling Point.
Okay, yes. I was like, I want to do a full episode about Sterling Point, but by the time we have the space availability to do that, yeah, we'll be way past it. So I think like we should chat about it today, and we'll let you know when there's going to be spoilers because I want to like ask a few spoilery things and chat about. But this series, Natasha had started it last time, right?
Yes.
Or had I started it too? I don't remember, but it was so good.
It was really well done.
Yes.
I think
so,
like,
well written, well acted, yeah. Well directed.
Yeah. And like they have a really young cast and I just feel like everyone's very talented. And I know that the showrunner Megan Park had really emphasized, and I heard her talk about it multiple times, that like she's like, everything that is written, yes, like we love the script, but also like I want there to be space for people, these actors, to say improv things how they feel like they should be said. And that's why it felt so real. There's literally a conversation that the two girls' leads are having, and she's like brushing her hair, and at one point she like gets caught off like trying to like do a braid, and she's like, wait, and then she'll get on another I'm like, that's so real, that conversation.
It's very, very well put together. And like, yeah, they're very good at really being in their characters. And there's so many really sweet moments. And all of the characters are very nuanced. Like, there's a lot of morally gray. And I think that makes for really great characters, because they make mistakes. They're very flawed and they have a lot to learn. And all the adults are flawed, but they're also like good people. Like, you know, there's good and bad to everybody, and it's really highlighted throughout this season, and I think that makes everything so much more juicy and relatable, because nobody's one thing.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, there's not one golden person who has done everything like the correct way. Like
everybody's made a big mistake. And they're trying to amend, or just realizing that they made a big mistake and coming to terms with it. And it makes for really great character development and character moments, and really emotional hitting moments.
Well, if you missed last week when we talked about it and like the kind of the synopsis, I do recall like seeing the trailer, and I think it's a hard show to market, because in a sense it's definitely similar, but I feel like a little bit more grounded. Not that like The Summer I Turned Pretty isn't grounded, but The Summer I Turned Pretty is about like young love, and this is more about, I think, siblings, and
it's about family relationships. Family. But yeah, but
there is love, romance
woven throughout it. Yes,
yes.
No, it's just like that's part of like our whole. That's part of what I really love about it, is that there's this first love interest that we know is an end game, but like he's still a good guy, you know? And you, our classic setup for something like this would be like this guy that is like nice to her, but is like a douchebag behind the scenes. But this boy is like really, really therapized and really trying to be good for her and like to everyone around him. He's really sweet, and he has his own like really interesting backstory. And I think it's really just promoting the idea of like good male role models on TV, because I know we've talked about this before, but like young men have these characters on TV that they end up like wanting to emulate, just like we have like women that we want to emulate. And so many of them are like really toxically misogynistic or toxically like masculine, you know, and everyone in the show is like has good traits and bad traits, even like the annoying people.
Yeah,
like her brother looks so much like Steve. Sorry, we didn't get to talk about that.
Okay, we do need to tell people the synopsis of the show.
Oh, so sorry. So, go for it. I got excited.
Okay, so the show centers around our main female lead. What is her name?
Her name is Annie.
Annie. Mm-hmm. Annie. Okay, so Annie has a twin brother. They live with their adopted father in New York. They've only known their adoptive dad. Okay, her mom, their adoptive mom.
Their mom died when she was two.
When they were two. So they live in a nice, beautiful home in New York City. And we start off with her being like, she's very neurotic. Like, she has like a mental breakdown about not getting into this program at summer to like do this business program. And then they get the news that their adoptive mom's father, their adopted grandfather, has passed away. This guy, they have never really spent any time with him. Like, they do not know him. They've just been told that he's an asshole from their dad. And they were left his estate, essentially, on this island in Canada.
His house and the island. He owns the island.
Yes. And as I've come to learn with all these Canadian shows now, especially like in the Toronto area, that people own cottages, and that's what they're called, and they go to the cottages, like, just like, I mean, it's the same everywhere, but
it's
like,
just like a lake house, or
it's just like a lake house,
cottage. Yeah.
And they call it the cottage.
It's on this beautiful lake where, like, people go for the summer. Like, really rich people have, like, really nice houses there. And, yeah, so she decides after she doesn't get into this program that she's going to go there. And she's not going to tell her dad because he doesn't want her to even read the letter that her grandfather left her. But she sneaks into his safe and gets it out and reads it. And she's like, I'm going to go and I'm not going to tell him. And her boyfriend is going to Thailand for the summer. And her boyfriend's gay, and there's a whole thing. But, like, she's not actually, like, they're not actually together because he's there exploring his sexuality, and she is just, you know, on her own. And anyway, so she's there, and her dad doesn't know until, like, halfway through the summer.
Yeah, and she finds out a lot of things on this island about her adoptive mom and her family. She's
learning about, like, her history and her family and also falling in love, and... It's like a coming of age family story, and it's done so well. And if you haven't watched it, I would pause now and fast forward like 5 minutes. Because we're going to talk spoilery stuff now. Yes. And don't watch the trailer, because it's better if you just watch it. Like, it's so delightful and also emotional.
Yeah. There's like lots of like... reveals that sometimes, like, the trailer reveals, so.
Yeah, the trailer does spoil the reveals. Okay, so how did you feel about her brother? He looks like Steve Carrington, and I couldn't get over it. Does he look like his, like, younger brother
or
something?
He does. I was trying to place that, but yeah, no, he really does.
Oh, my God. It was, like, the whole time I was like, are they related?
I just, you know, they're twins, and they're brunette, so obviously I was putting myself... into their relationship.
He was so annoying at first.
He was really frustrating.
He kind of grows on you, but he's still annoying.
Yes.
He's Mark Ruffalo's son? No shit. Oh my God. That's crazy. Wow. Well, he was good. He's just looks like Steve Carrington, and he's annoying. His character's annoying. But yeah, so the lead girl who lives in Sterling Point, also, this is giving me flashbacks to Moody's Point. Do you remember Moody's Point from the Amanda Show? It was like a teen drama that she used to, like, it was like a part of like a sketch, like on Saturday Night Live. They'd like go to Moody's Point on her show. Oh my, Siobhan remembers. And it had like a theme song and like slow motion walking of teens on the beach. Mm-mm. I was just like, oh my God, Moody's Point. Anyway, back to Sterling Point. So the girl who plays her sister, why can't I remember her sister's name now?
Annie and Ramona.
Ramona! Thank you, Pauline. Ramona is so good. And she plays this... I think the only critique I have of the show is that it's like, it feels like they can't do math a lot of the time. Because they're like... The mom died when they were two. But at one point, they say that Ramona's a 17-year-old girl. But then she's a 16-year-old girl. And then, like, she turned... Like, it was all over the place. And I'm like, I'm sure somebody knows the timing. But, like, nobody edited the ages coming out of people's mouth. So for a while, I was like, this literally doesn't make sense. She can't be 17. She has to be 16. And if she's 16, how is she alone? Like, it was very confusing. Anyway, Siobhan says her mom was trapped in a hot air balloon for the entire show. Oh, yeah, that was Moody's Point. Oh, my God.
I do not remember this.
Oh, my God. Every little episode would end with her mom being like, hello. She was just like in a hot air balloon. Anyway. What were your thoughts on how did you think that this was going to end? Because I was convinced for a little bit that, like, it was going to end with her pregnant, Annie, and, like, wanting to stay there and raise the kid because of the way Gilmore Girls ended and, like, mirroring the mom's journey.
wait, what was the original question?
How did you think it was going to end? And are you like, how do you feel about the ending of it? Because at the end of this, like, she decides she's going to stay. Annie is going to stay at Sterling Point, which is what I wanted. Because I think, like, the metaphor here is, like, she's been the parent her whole life. Mm-hmm. And Ramona's been without a parent, basically, her whole life. Like, yeah. Obviously, she's had her grandpa, but, like, it's not the same thing. And she needs to be parented, and Annie needs time to grow on her own.
No, I really liked how it ended. And I was, like, I don't think I was thinking about how it was ending. I just kind of, like, I kind of wanted the girls to stay together. But, mm-hmm. like, obviously, they're going to come together at some point. Yeah. It was kind of wild, like, thinking that she was the other guy's daughter. And, like, that was wild. Like, and he never said anything. Mm-hmm. I couldn't, no. And then, like, finding out that it's actually Annie's dad is the real father.
There are a lot of twists with the paternity here.
Yeah. And I, like, going through that was wild. And it's like, I just wanted them all to have, like, a good relationship now mm-hmm. that they've found each other. So,
Cynthia was like, I didn't like the end. She should have gone home and finished her senior year. It's like, but that's no fun. And she was like, what can I say? I'm in my late 30s. I'm logical. I'm like, Annie was so unhappy there, though. Like, she's at her most neurotic in that environment. Mm-hmm. And I think it's healthier for her. And who's to say that she won't finish senior year up in Sterling Point? Now I just want to say Moody's Point every single time.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, the whole ride was delightful.
Oh, my God. Katie just said, I'm confused about how Negan fits in this whole thing. Is that the guy who plays Joe? I was trying to place him the whole time, and I couldn't place him. Oh my God.
Yeah, and he also plays Sam and Dean's dad in Supernatural. Denny from Grey's Anatomy. Yeah, Negan from The Walking Dead. I was like, I know that
guy. Who is that guy? He's the guy who killed Glenn. That bitch.
Yep.
I stopped watching the show.
I just know him as Sam and Dean's dad from Supernatural. And he also married to what's her face from One Tree Hill.
He's a handsome man. Is it Sophia Bush?
No, not Sophia Bush.
I don't know who else is from One Tree Hill except Chad Michael Murray.
The blonde. Who is in that? Yeah.
Cool. Should we move on to our main discussion?
No, because I want to say one thing. In the finale, if you guys have watched Sterling Point, I don't think I've cried like that in a show in a very long time. Holy fucking God. The way that I was like...
Yeah.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was beautiful.
It really was. That sequence with her mom was really, really beautiful. And I was also sobbing. Because at first you're like, is this a memory? And then you realize she's living out like her what if she grew up here. And it's really, really moving. Literally, Cynthia was texting me as she watched it. She was like, is this a dream? Is this real? Is this real?
And I was literally like, just watch it. I was so sad. I was like so happy. I was like alone and no one else was here. And I was just like,
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those you want to watch by yourself and just like enjoy and emote.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's really good. All right. Is there anything else you want to talk about from it?
No.
Okay. I really quickly want to talk about the love interest, Ellis, because he's so cute. What a cutie pie.
Oh, yeah, Ellis.
He's so pretty. I couldn't get over, like, the whole time. I was like, that boy is so fucking pretty. He has the most beautiful eyes I've ever seen.
Yeah. He's so pretty. He's got, like, these, like, smiley eyes.
Mm-hmm. They're always smizing, and, like, his eyelashes are so curled up.
Yes. I definitely feel like if Twilight was ever remade, Annie and Alice would be Bella and Jacob.
But then I'd be rooting for Bella and Jacob because they have such great chemistry. Hot damn. The closet scene was so good.
Yeah, he's so cute. Sweet.
When he like pulled her over and did the hug, I was like, oh, so smooth. So smooth.
Was it Katie who said, someone commented, there's nothing wrong with Rory, but everything is right with Ellis?
Yeah. Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah. It was really sweet. And then like when they were kind of yada yadaing them being together, I was worried because like we went from that to being like montage of happiness, and I was like, wait, we have 40 minutes left on the episode. What's going on?
I just want a second season now.
That's why I thought she was gonna get pregnant, because they were like, she woke up with him, but then they made it clear that they hadn't had sex, and I was like, okay. But are they going to now? Like, and there was like a point of asking about a condom earlier. So I was like, I don't know. Like,
are we talking,
talking
about Rory?
No, but with Rory was when they asked about the condom. But I'm just like thinking, is it going to end up with her being pregnant in Sterling Point? Like, my brain is convinced we're going there, even though like, I don't like that. What? Yeah, sorry.
I know. I haven't even thought that.
Yeah, I think like naturally that if this was the last, if it was one season, she would end up pregnant.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Anyway.
Wait, Katie.
Annie having a crisis about her being a whore after losing her virginity was so relatable. It was so funny. I couldn't believe she just had sex with him. What was happening was like, really? Him?
What? No, I liked it. I liked Rory. I'm sorry. I liked Rory. And I was like, I'm like, okay.
There's something about Rory that's awkward to me. And I just like.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
But I'm like, just do it, girl.
I understand the wanting to like just do it and be done and not have to think about it being like a virgin. Mm-hmm. Also,
Ramona and Una's relationship was traumatic but also so good. I love Una.
Yes, I love Una too. Ramona in general, like, she was maybe she's the rough. Most annoying character after her brother, like, because she's 16 and she's very 16, you know, like she'll be like, you're never gonna be my sister, and then the next day she's like, come live with me, and like, are you, and it's just like, ah! And then she does that over and over and over again. Like, this is never going to work out. I'm never going to change my mind. I'm never going to change my mind. I want to die. Like, I'm like, girl, do not sell your house, you 16-year-old who changes your mind every hour. How do you not recognize that you changed your mind about literally everything you said never to in the
past
2 weeks?
Because she's 16.
I know. It's just, like, infuriating watching it from hindsight, you know? It's like, girl, yes. No. And I'm so glad Annie was like, sorry. No, I can't do that.
All right.
Wait. One more thing. The period scene was like the cutest thing. And I thought that was like the most adorable with the period crowns.
Oh, yeah. The period
crowns. And they like dance around the fire and we're like celebrating her period. And she was like, I don't want this. But then she like, honestly, she enjoyed it. And then Annie being like, I don't even remember my period because I don't want to tell. It was such a great line there. Like, what a great sequence. And then when she went back to Ramona and Ramona had a period crown for her.
Aww.
It was so cute.
It was just really heartfelt. This is such a great show.
So
everyone
good.
Go watch it.
Everyone go watch Sterling Point, and I hope you weren't spoiled.
Siobhan definitely was spoiled. She says, Sterling Point sounds so good, though.
All right, we are going to move into our main discussion about ACOTAR. Oh, Elise, I'm so glad. I think it did get renewed, Katie. Didn't it get renewed? Or was that my imagination? I think it got renewed, but we'll for sure talk about it next week if it got renewed. Anyway,
We are going to go into our main discussion. If you don't know already, our podcast is supported by viewers and listeners like you. And we are so grateful for all of our patrons. We have a Patreon. That's why we're here today. And we'd love to have you as part of our patron community as well. Let me tell you why you want to be a patron, okay? You want to be a patron because you get the show ad-free. Ads are so fucking annoying, okay? And when you're a patron, no ads. Next, you also get to come to recordings and put your two cents in the chat. When we're talking to people, those are our patrons, and they get to like steer the episode around when they make comments, you know? Next, the biggest reason why it's really fun to be a patron is that we have an extra show, literally, attached to every single episode from the beginning of time, every called Fan Multi Time.
Baby.
Every episode, and it's at least half an hour, but a lot of times we go over because we be telling funny stories about our lives every week, and you're missing out. You're missing out on so many stories, and it's a lot of times like our favorite thing to do is we get to like just shoot the shit and have fun with and make fun of ourselves. So that is at our Team Jacob level, you get all the way back to episode 120, and we're at episode 175, so that's a lot of episodes of Fangirl Tea Time. And then there's Team Edward, where you get like a lot of bonus episodes, AMAs, commentary, so you can watch movies with our commentary on it, so it's like we're watching it together. And then if you are a Team Polis Bananas member, you get our whole archive of Fangirl Tea Time. So that's 175 episodes. And we have Fangirl bonding sessions over Zoom every single month. Our next one is coming up this week. Unless you sign up right now and you're listening to this on Friday, you're going to miss this one. But the 21st of August, we've got one coming. And then next month, there will be another one. And we'd love your support there. Making a podcast, if you haven't made one, you might not know. It's expensive. It's time consuming. It's a lot of work. So you are keeping us on the air. And we are ever so grateful. But we do understand if you can't afford to monetarily support the show, but you can support in free ways too. If you do like the show, you can follow us for free on your favorite app, Spotify, Apple Music, Apple Podcasts. You can hit the subscribe button for free on YouTube, youtube.com/@thisworkingfangirls. All of that really helps us out. And what else can they do? Talk to people? Natasha, what does talking to people mean?
Oh, you guys can tell your friends and family about the show. If there's a friend in your life and they've maybe watched something that we've talked about or read something that we've talked about, I'm sure that they will love our show. So that really helps us out. Word of mouth, honestly, is probably the best way.
People trust you. Mm-hmm. Your friends trust you. Elise says, I feel like you needed that pitch recorded because that was perfect advertising. Oh my gosh. Thank you. It came out really well.
It did. You had your whole like radio voice.
Yeah. We should cut that and just pop it in the next couple episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Elise. Elise says, can confirm tea time is a highlight of my week every week. That's so sweet. Thank you so much for being a patron.
All right. We are going to move in to talk about ACOTA. I'm fucking psyched. If you're a patron, we're going right on in. If you're not, sorry. There's some annoying commercials, but we will be back in a moment.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And we're back. All right. Boop. So we have been patiently fucking waiting for the next two titles
and the next two covers for Sarah J. Maas's next two ACOTAR books, because we for so long haven't even had a title.
No.
And it's coming out October 27th.
Six and seven.
It's coming out October 27th, and it is currently August 17th. So that is very, very close to not have even a title. Like, wild. So this morning, I open my eyeballs at 10 a.m., open Instagram, and it says posted 58 seconds ago.
And really?
Sarah. Oh. And I was like, holy shit. She just hit send.
Well, and also her entire Instagram feed was archived.
Yeah, so I went to her Instagram feed and she pulled a Taylor Swift Reputation.
Archive.
And if you've heard, have you heard this like rumor that Sarah's beefing with her publisher? Yes. I don't know what's going on there, but like it is strange the way that this has been released. The news.
And the yeah. I mean, there are some like interesting things going on.
And I'm a little wondering if that's why we're calling this book 6 and 7.
Because I made her split it into two?
No, because this wasn't like, there was an Instagram video about someone like theorizing about what's going on with Sarah and her publisher, and maybe she's not happy there, and maybe that's why this book is like being chopped so strangely into four pieces. I think it's being chopped because it literally is so long. And they wouldn't let her release it as one because the book would be literally like a death hazard. it's because this is so confusing. Okay, so this is book 6 and 7 when in actuality it's book 5 and 6, right? But book 6 and 7 isn't even book 6 and 7 because it's one big book. But book 6 and 7 also is three books because 1 and 2 is 1 and 2 is 2 and 3. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, the second book is two parts of the book.
Yeah.
And then the fourth book is the last part, which is huge. She did talk about it in Call Her Daddy, but she didn't talk about, like, any sort of beef. She talked about, like, how many pages you're allowed to have in a book because of, like, the way that books are binded. And you can't have more than 1,000 pages. It just doesn't work. Anyway, I don't know what's going on, but it does make it if she is contracted for a certain amount of books, it does, like, that would explain why all of a sudden the novella is being called a book. You know?
Why would that explain that?
Because maybe she wanted that to be called a book so that she'd be further into the contract.
You know what
I'm saying? Yeah. But I don't know. Like, it's also very possible that the internet just started calling it the fourth book. And then because all of these people started reading it after it already come out and were binging them all together, they were just like, oh, yeah, the fourth book is this one.
I don't know. I
feel like that shit happens.
It does? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what happened with Assassin's Blade. People were like, when do I read it? It belongs here. It's the first book in the series. I'm like, it's not a book in the series at all. It's a novella. It's a bunch of novellas. And I was like, so I just filmed a video about this that I'm going to edit right after this so I can put it up in the morning.
You did film it.
Okay. I did. I couldn't not film it. I literally like couldn't go through the day without sharing my thoughts on these fucking covers. And so I was talking about how, like, we've talked about this. Like, if we called novellas books in the series, Twilight would have another book. The Mortal Instruments would have like 20 extra books.
Yeah.
Because there's like a million novellas in every binded novella thing. Like, it's ridiculous to call it a book. Literally nothing happens in it.
No, nothing happens. It's just like, but a little like deet deet.
Yeah. It's a little dooty doot Christmas special. And it's not even fun. It's like dramatic. It's like also, angsty.
Yeah, Metal goes, that would be like people calling Ferrest the fourth book of the Lunar Chronicles instead of Winter.
And even Assassin's Blade, like, people don't call that an 8-book series unless they're like
again, unless they're noobs who read them all together based off of how someone on the internet told them to read it on TikTok. Like, those people do look at it as a book in the series a lot of the time because they're just reading it all at once. So I don't know what happened. And I don't like to, like, I can't picture any publisher treating Sarah poorly. She's, like, the queen of the universe for them. She's literally supporting their company in every way someone can.
No, literally, the title, like, the tagline on top says, I think phenomenon. Global phenomenon. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Does Twilight say that? I got it. Let me...
I don't know. Twilight does not say the number one global phenomenon. I mean, Sarah has more books. Like, she's definitely sold more books. She's made more books, you know? There are, like, only, like, 6 books or 7 books that Stephanie has out. She has 8 books just in the Throne of Glass series. Then there are 7 books going to be in ACOTAR. And then we have 3 books out in Crescent City. So there are so many books. Anyway... let's get to the actual titles here. So the first book, okay, wait, before even the titles, her website changed this morning and my feed as her like things went up, people had already made videos being like, her website has changed. It's this colored. It has this picture. What does it mean? And I'm like, guys, this is not Taylor Swift. Like, it means that the cover is dropping. She doesn't put like random ass, like in my video that I made, I'm like, let's go back historically and look at our other Sarah J. Maas covers and see how much you could discern about the plot based on what you see. All right. If you go back to A Court of Thorns and Roses, the old new cover, you know, the new old one with that, there is a wolf on it with an arrow through him. Okay. That is the first scene in the book. It tells us literally nothing about the plot. Okay? It triggers the plot. If you look at A Court of Mist and Fury, you know what's on that? A fucking raven. When do we ever see a bird in A Court of Mist and Fury? Literally can't remember. The only little trinket you can see in there is he's holding a ring. So, like, you could say that's the ring that Rhysand has, you know, that she gets from the Weaver. Then... you look at A Court of Wings and Ruin. You know what's on the cover of that one? A sword going through some smoke. Okay? Wow! Really gave us some insight. There's a war.
Smoke demon.
Swords exist. All right? And the one that gave us the most, which is also nothing if you haven't read the book, is A Court of Silver Flames, which is has the mask on.
The mask.
Yeah. We don't know anything about the mask going in. So you're not going to be able to discern, like, oh, that's a magical object. It's part of a trio that one needs to rule the world and unite the courts. Like, God. You have to read the book to know. So, okay. A Court of Splintered Harmony. Yes. Akash.
It's Akash.
Akash.
Akash. A Court it's of Splint. Akash.
Akash.
ACOTAR. Wait. Akash. It's Akash.
Akosh. Harmony. Akosh.
Wait, but you're missing the O. It's Akosh.
No, Akosh.
Court of AC.
A Court of Splintered Harmony.
Akosh.
Yeah, Akosh.
You missed the whole O. It's Akosh.
Akosh.
Akosh. Okay.
A Court of Splintered Harmony. We're like, what does it mean? There's like a fire on it, but the fire is like a monster. You know,
there's teeth.
There's teeth, and there's like almost like eyes, and it could be like a monster oyster opening sideways on fire with bones under it.
Oh yeah, the bones.
So it's not giving much. Other than Microsoft Word gradient, which has become a theme in publishing.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. I didn't think that was the actual cover. Natasha, I thought it was a fucking placeholder.
Covers dropped.
I thought we were just getting the title. I didn't even look at the, because it's so ugly. It's so ugly and boring. But what the fuck is with the gradient?
All of them have been ugly. The gradient is like the new thing. The 90s word art is back, baby. Because I don't know if you saw Hollywood Ending. It's the most 90s word art thing I've ever seen in my life.
I'm like, guys, come on. Why? I really need some like artists from like the 1960s to come, or the 70s to come back and give us some like cool fantasy covers. Like, I want some real fucking art. I don't want some squiggly lines and a gradient.
I mean, like, to be fair, it's a drawing. Like, it's not just the squiggly lines, but it is pretty.
It's a sketch.
It's a sketch. Yeah.
Okay. People are also agreeing with me. I thought it was a placeholder still.
Yeah.
I thought it was still the placeholder.
The reason I knew it wasn't is I read number one worldwide phenomenon across the top. And I was like, this is the cover.
It's fine. They're just Uggo.
So they're all Uggo. Okay. Even going back to the originals, I don't think this was the best cover, but I got used to it.
I like that better.
It has more character. It's got
We see a cool outfit and an arm.
Yeah. Say what you want about the big people with their heads cut off. I will read those books. The ones that are just objects, like if I saw this cover, A Court of Silver Flames, without any knowledge about what it was or who the author was, I would just blow right past this because the cover doesn't. Intriguing.
Just words.
It's just words with a background thing. It's very quote adult in that way where it's boring.
I don't want boring. I want cool. I want epic adventure.
You know what I also really love about the original covers is that the and the of and the and were inside the
yeah, I like that.
Of a court of I know, me too. It's creative. Hold
the other one next to each other. I want to see it.
These are the two different vibes.
The of is like, I feel like it's weird there.
I mean,
it's just like,
it has to be there. Like the uniqueness of this is like, you have to kind of look at it to see what it says because the of and are in the circles.
Yeah.
But like, this is really interesting. This does give more YA, and that's part of why like adults like boring ass looking books apparently. And that's why we changed them. That's when they rebranded, when adults were being targeted by the marketing. Metal. Quark, Thorns, and Roses.
Okay. I feel like, though, these sketches with the gradient are also very different from what the new brand.
Because this is the Valkyrie cycle, which is very exciting because that means we are really centering on what Nesta has begun. You know, she has opened this new camaraderie of women and this association of the Valkyrie. I don't know what their official name's going to be, but they climbed the mountain. They're like officially certified warriors, you know, and they're going to be heading this. And the question, and everyone's like, what does this mean? I mean, I think it means that Nesta is the person who is going to be destined to save the courts. And if you remember how we left off in Silver Flames, like, we had possession of all three of the items, like, and she could call them to her. Like, they call to her, like, calls to like. She had the little harp and
the mortal instruments.
She used it to like help save Feyre at the end when she was having her the mortal instruments that delayed came into my ear. I missed it. She had the mortal instruments, but she had made three new mortal instruments. And she's the only one who could safely wield them because she has enough power to wield them. Even after she gives some up back to the bathtub to save Feyre at the end, I think she's still going to be the only one who has the true power to wield them and unite the courts. But
the cauldron. Remember, Christine likes to call the cauldron the bathtub.
Yes, the bathtub, the cauldron. Anyway,
But you got to remember now, also, we've opened the door to Bryce. And so there is
the world.
There is the merging of worlds that might be happening there. We don't know if we'll see crossover. My bet is yes, because I think that we're going to be fighting. We have to unite to fight like the greater evil, which is like the angels who like take over the worlds, you know?
God, I'm going to need to be reminded of the. Yeah, what did we learn in
Throne of Glass? But we need to finish the end of Flame and Shadow for a second time because I want to know the exact details. But okay, let's look at the cover. The cover of the second book is called A Court of Forgotten Harmony. They both have musical elements to their titles, which really does call to the harp because you could travel through worlds using that fucking harp.
My God.
We're definitely going to be traveling.
It's like in the Odyssey where it's boom,
boom. Literally, it's like that. Honestly, I was trying to place what that reminded me of, and I think it's this because she would do one note and that would bring her someplace.
Okay. Wait, remind, because so someone said the Dead Trove. Pauline said
the Dead Trove is so the moral instruments.
the mask.
The mask, the crown, and the harp.
The harp.
So the crown lets you control people's minds. The mask lets you control dead people. And the harp has lots of different abilities. One of them is world walking.
We use the harp in Flame and Shadows, Crescent City, right?
I want to say perhaps. I have to reread it. I'm now forgetting because I've read Silver Flames 3 times. I have only read that one and a half times. And yes. We haven't gotten to the harp part. But yes, I think so. I think the harp came into play in there. That rings the bell. But so the harp is the melodies. We also have this theme of music and art and dance that like went away in the different courts, you know?
Okay.
But like they're bringing it back. And he brings her that special iPod where you have to go record it and then you can play it whenever you want. Cassian gives that to her in A Court of Silver Flames as a present for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there is this musical theme and there is the harp, which she controls. So
Nesta controls?
Nesta can control it, yes. Nesta can wield the harp. And they do make reference to the fact that like maybe to survive, they have to reunite all the courts. And like you need these objects to do it. Will Rysand be the one to do it? And he's like doesn't want to do it. And Nesta, I think, is probably going to have to do it. But we'll see. Maybe she has to do it with someone. Maybe like the sisterhood has to work together to bring peace to the courts. We'll see. It is called peace. The Valkyrie cycle. Women rule them all. Anyway,
I was quoting Star Wars. Sorry, you don't know that.
I was just excited about
women
ruling. But then we have A Court of Forgotten Harmony. So, like, I think like it's forgotten harmony, like they forget how to be one, united. But also on the cover is a huge spider. And if you've read Throne of Glass, like, I think everyone got PTSD. See that fucking spider with the fucking silk? Because there's these special spiders that, like spin this special fucking silk. But then we find out that the spiders are actually Valg. The Valg are what's, like, taking over all the people in Throne of Glass and, like, sucking out their fucking lives like parasites and, like, want to take over the whole planet. So that's alarming. And great. I don't like it.
Great.
And now I'm like, I didn't feel resolved on the Valg at the end of Throne of Glass. And now I'm like, are they coming? Have they been here? Do we not know? Like, they're so scary because, like, you don't know when someone's been taken over by a Valg. And then to undo the Valgness, like, you have to be really intensely healed by one woman who could do it in Throne of Glass. So it's bad. Pretty bad.
So we're gonna have to find that woman.
I mean, maybe her name's Irene, spelled with a Y, and she's in Throne of Glass. But I don't know but just seeing that spider makes me think that the worlds are all colliding.
Well, yes.
Like we've seen hints of Throne of Glass, but we haven't seen blatantly a Throne of Glass character. And I saw Allison was texting me this morning, my friend from college, and she was like, "I saw a theory that Elaine, because you know how we talk about Elaine maybe like turning into evil and like going against them? And someone was like, there's a theory that Elaine is Maeve, and Maeve is one of those spider valgs. And I'm just like, but that would mean she was body snatched, you know?
Yeah.
And it is possible. She has been really different and quiet. I'm not going to put it past, but I think I would be mad. It's going to depend how it goes, if that's a thing. I have to reread Throne of Glass. Because we got the history of Maeve, but the thing is, yeah, Maeve can probably body snatch because she's a Valg. So I don't know.
Yeah, I wish I could add to this. I'm going to finish Born. I need to finish. Yes. I know. Yeah. After I finish Romance Revival, I'm going to go back into Air of Fire. Don't worry. Yeah.
I have to definitely reread Throne of Glass because I want to be like refreshed on all these details. The thing, and then I think it's going to be really important to be fresh on Crescent City 3 and Akasaf.
Because if I remember correctly, they talk about the ACOTAR characters, I think, as I remember them talking about them as if like they were gods or something.
You mean in Throne of Glass?
No, in City of Heavenly, not, sorry.
I know. City of Crescent City 3. I don't think they talk about them like gods, but like maybe that Rysand has the power of a god.
I know that they talk about like their powers being insane or like intense, and like they're kind
at
of
the end of like the second one, or the beginning of the third one. I think I remember her talking about the power being really crazy. I think Az's power is very suspicious that it's from a different world.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, but like maybe all the Illyrians might be have originated from like Crescent City or something, or the opposite way around. Crescent City had people from their world come in. Remember, like there was all these worlds that came for refuge in that world after their worlds were taken over by the angels. Remember the end of this book was basically like angels just use everybody for food. They like take over the worlds and then eat them.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Like that is the end of Crescent City 3. And then like we get the angels off the planet. But like a lot of other planets had been, maybe the angels even brought them here to like farm them or something. Because the witches were there.
I think they're scared of ACOTAR world because
they fought them off completely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what it is.
But and the monsters in their dungeons are like the angel-y beings,
yes,
right?
So yeah. I think yeah. so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot we have to refresh, but I don't think there's a lot to learn from the cover drawings. But all right, so that is going to conclude our episode today. Thank you all so much for being here and listening to the show and supporting the show. We're so grateful for y'all. Our show is edited by Shannon Burton. Our music is by Cole Jenkins with vocals by Heather Traska. We release new episodes every single Friday. We are off to go record Fangirl Tea Time, which if you become a patron, you'll be coming right along with us. It's right after the show. You don't have to do anything. It just comes on. Thank you all so much for being here. We make episodes every Friday. I'll see you next time. Bye!
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.